Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grainne Reid, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. I'm thrilled to welcome Georgia Goodwin, Chief Client Officer at global influencer marketing agency Digital Voices. Georgia, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Hello, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Amazing. And alongside Georgia, we have ExchangeWire's research lead, Matt Broughton. Matt, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Amazing. Well, yeah, as always, we're going to be diving into three standout stories that made waves this week. First story sees only one third, 34% of the UK public say they consume news through either print or online news brands, finds the latest Media Nations report from Ofcom. The young 16 to 24 year olds are least likely to tune into news brands, 22%, but older people surveyed didn't turn to news brands for news in significant numbers either. For example, only 44% of those aged over 75 said they used either print or digital news brands for information. TV dominates news consumption for adults over the age of 34. Meanwhile, younger audiences generally prefer social media or other online forums of keeping track of the news. Georgia, to you, what are the biggest hurdles for traditional news brands as they try to adapt to changing news consumption?
There's a lot, I think. It's, you know, the way that Gen Z, as you've said, of consuming news is drastically changing. And I think there are a huge amount of hurdles for traditional news brands. And I think it comes from, firstly, you know, as you said, I work in influencer marketing. A huge amount of content is distilled from influencers, and that includes kind of information on the news as many other topics. And I think, I do think that the traditional news brands have a long way to go to kind of keep up with what is the ever-changing world of consumption. I think there's a, I had an amazing chat with someone this morning, actually, about this topic. So her name's Zoe, and she's the head of kind of social marketing for EY, but she's an ex-journalist. So I was actually quite timely to be able to kind of talk to her about her perspective on this as well. And I think that both of us were agreed. You know, firstly, I'd love to see news brands actually entering schools, spending some time with the younger generation and influencing them and discussing with them and helping build credibility. Because I think something that influencers obviously do really well is the fact that they build authenticity with their audiences, and through that authenticity comes credibility. And as you said, like, the older generations are definitely still consuming news in a more traditional way. But I guess if you are to go on to Sky News tonight, you are, as a Gen Z, are potentially not going to be reflected in the journalists that are kind of presenting back to you. So I think firstly, it'd be really interesting to see how they could leverage influencers, maybe in more local regions, to actually kind of talk more authentically and basically kind of adapt to the times.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I guess touching on that, Matt, so what are your thoughts? Do you think the decline in direct news brands consumption is a crisis of trust, a crisis of format, a crisis of relevance?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a crisis. Obviously, you know, looking at the report charts, it's easy to seize upon those relatively lower stats for the news brands. Obviously, the only 10% of 16 to 24 year olds are reading newspapers, or that only one third are consuming that via the traditional newspaper brands. But actually, when I looked at the stats, I thought, oh wow, this just shows how diversified UK audiences are in terms of their news consumption. 34% through newspapers, 51% through social media, 37% through radio, 68% through television. It shows that people are consuming news in several different ways. So it's not just a newspaper good, social good, everything else bad or whatever. And I think as well, the report went on to mention in terms of the timing of the ad placements. And I think that's something to really look to in terms of brands wanting to advertise against news publishing, to kind of strategize in terms of where, you know, when and where their ad placements are being placed, just to make sure they're getting the most out of each individual channel.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting perspective as well, because I don't think it isn't a crisis as such. I think it's a very big shift in the way that news is consumed, and I think we should embrace that. And I don't think we're going to get people back to watching it on TV in the traditional sense or in the newspaper. Something I think could be really interesting for news brands to consider is, I guess, you know, the only reason I go onto Facebook is to look at like my local communities. So the area that I live in, you know, what's happened, what's happening with the local coffee shop, or is there a new Now shop that's popped up? And I think that could be a really cool way for news brands to infiltrate that world, because I think people are looking for even more localization. And we're not just talking town, you know, all the way kind of down to postcode level. And I think in a world of kind of AI automation and things feeling maybe more generic, actually people are wanting more localized communities, and actually news brands could infiltrate that in a really cool way.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And we saw that there was over £500 million lost in ad revenue since 2019. There's been a decrease of $534 million in annual ad spend between 2019 and 2024. Based on kind of what you were saying, do you think the ad industry is abandoning news brands too quickly?
Potentially, but I think news brands need to find a new way to commercialize and monetize their offering. So I think they probably haven't adapted, and it's probably a very similar sense that it's been for a long time in terms of the way that you buy ads with news brands. So I think they should potentially look to adopt different ways to monetize their offering, and you know look at other ways to engage and essentially have coverage as a brand. So I think they could look at different types of partnerships, or as I mentioned, I think influencers could be a huge opportunity to support and build credibility with trusted influencers and equally in partnership with news brands. So I think it's a way for them to adapt so that the ad revenue isn't kind of being detached from the business.
Interesting. And Matty, how should advertisers respond to this shift in media consumption?
So I think, obviously, in terms of the shifts, yes, it's going on within news. But in terms of how much budget is being allocated towards news, obviously we had that WPP Media, if I can say that correctly, appearance at the House Judiciary Committee last year, when they revealed that only 1.28% of their clients' digital budgets are going towards news. Obviously, brand safety concerns have been there in the past, and that's predominantly what they're saying there. But obviously, if you look at how much people are consuming news, it's an untapped opportunity. And in terms of, to George's point, in terms of that diversification of what publishers can do, we've seen obviously stats come out in the last couple of days in terms of the New York Times doing absolute gangbusters in terms of its ad revenue. I think it's up just over 18%. So to, you know, that point, the diversification, I think, is really important. And I think there's possibly a missed opportunity for the UK publishers to be exploring CTV channels. Obviously, you've got, you know, lower barriers to entry now. You've got so many AVOD platforms out there. And I think, you know, last year we saw Chick-fil-A, the US fast food restaurant, launch their own streaming service. If they can launch a streaming service, then why can't, say, the likes of The Guardian or The Independent launch their own CTV channel? I, you know, flicked through an unspecified AVOD platform yesterday, and the second best performing channel at that time was the Cash in the Attic channel. So I think, obviously, there's more opportunity there for UK publishers. News is that there is obviously this appetite for news. Maybe explore the other channels. They've embraced podcasting. Why not CTV at this point?
Yeah, what opportunities, Georgia, do you see here for different players in the ecosystem?
I guess it's a tricky one. I think that for me, I kind of mentioned it earlier, I think in terms of different players in the ecosystem, I think it would be local influencers with credibility and you know, people that do already have that you know, I guess a strong following, and they speak about news regularly. I think a partnership with traditional news brands could kind of diversify their audiences, have the ability to speak to younger audiences such as Gen Z and find it more engaging. I also had a look at unspecified news brands, social platform, and a fair few of them, and they feel very samey. You know, that you can't really differentiate the UK news brand social kind of feeds from one from the other. And I think actually they kind of missed a mark, I guess, because it feels very samey to the way that they're showing up in other platforms. So it feels very samey in the way that they might show up on kind of live TV and also in the newspapers. But I actually think what they've realized, forgotten, is it'd be better to penetrate a new audience through the social platform. So I think actually leveraging other voices and not just their traditional kind of journalists. I think something else that could be really interesting is actually using journalists who are specialists or scientists or nutritionists or people who are actually on the ground and understand. So if, you know, if hypothetically, if you're reporting on something around, you know, I mean, you see this all the time, like blueberries is the latest superfood, you know, like those types of kind of news updates, actually, rather than just a, you know, your traditional, you know, X news brands journalists reporting on it, be amazing to hear directly from the source of the scientist or the nutritionist behind it. So there's so many amazing influencers in that space who are experts in what they do. So actually hearing from them directly as the journalist and the specialist, I think could really build trust with a much younger audience.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, lots to look at there. And as we see news consumption habits evolve, so must the strategies behind them. Let's shift gears a little bit and dive into the next big news story shaking up the creator economy. Mm-hmm. It has become more expensive for brands to work with influencers over the past 6 months, following the leader of Unilever saying he wants to drop 50% of its annual budget on creator marketing, according to The Drum. Premier Foods and Nescafe have announced similar plans. Since Unilever's announcement, several social media agencies have said they've seen an uptick in client spend and requests for proposals. According to research from Billion Dollar Boy, 52% of UK marketers are now investing in excess of £765,000 annually in creator marketing. Similarly, seven influencer marketers told DigiDay that creator rates have risen noticeably across all platforms. Three of the marketers reported that some creators have doubled their fees from 2024. Creators are also charging higher sponsorship rates because they understand that they're taking on an increasingly central role in brands' marketing plans. Influencers charging extra fees for exclusivity or the rights to use their content on other channels is also becoming more common. Georgia, what do you think of these price increases?
Firstly, I think it's amazing to hear and see how many brands are now taking influencer marketing seriously. So my background, I spent kind of 15 years in the world of WPP, working across a multitude of channels. And, you know, kind of as I left the world of WPP to specialize in influencer marketing, it felt a little bit taboo. It's like, oh, I can't believe you're going to go and work in influencer marketing. And I guess at the time I spotted it as an opportunity. I could see that was going to be drastically growing. And to see that now and to see what a dominant channel and ROI driver for brands is incredible. And I think the Unilever statement really sits behind the power of influencer marketing. So firstly, I think the opportunity it has become even more important. And because of that, the costs have gone up. And I think really it's and I've seen a few people maybe say, you know, that it's potentially influencers kind of just like hoping to get more. And actually, I disagree. I don't think it's coming from a place of greed or wanting to get more for the sake of it. I think it's the professionalization of the industry and it finally getting the kind of clout and revenue stream that it deserves. I think also something that the numbers don't show is actually how much more complicated the asks of the influencers are. So last year, it was definitely much more traditional. It'd be like, hi, influencer X, could you post this on your stories on Monday? But actually, it's changed drastically. What we're asking for influencers is huge. You know, we've just done a recent partnership for our client Magnum, and we've asked creators to attend Cannes Film Festival. We've asked them to attend five different events while they're there, to post before, to post after, to come up with a strategic idea. You know, we actually had calls with people who are dressmakers and how could they create a clothing range for the whole trip. And, you know, we have these amazing brainstorms and it's shifted drastically from them being content creators to, I guess, individuals where we're partnering with for their strategic thinking, their understanding of creativity and their advice and consultancy. So actually, I think it's in line with the fact that what we're asking from influencers is becoming more and more and even more exciting. Something I thought was really cool was Starbucks hiring an in-house creator in the US to go and work in their marketing team. And I think that just shows how seriously we're taking the way that creators understand audiences, like quite a lot of brands can't and don't, and also their creative thinking in terms of being out the box and actually driving cut through. So I think, to be honest, it's amazing to see, and I'm excited that the influencers are kind of being given the credibility that they deserve.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Matt, obviously, on this point and from what Georgia said, the ask of creators is a lot more than what it previously was. Do you think this surge in creator rates is sustainable?
I think it's it's reflective of the market. Obviously, these creators are doing much more complex asks in terms of what they're being, you know, requested to do as part of any given influence campaign. And obviously, if you look at the platforms that have done really well in the past few years, you've got your TikToks, your Instagrams, your YouTubes, compared that to, say, the more traditional, say, cable brands, as an example, their influencer led at their heart. So it's understandable that these creators should be asking for money. It's the, you know, that same argument in the sense of the music industry and Spotify. Obviously, you've got so many billions and trillions of hours of people streaming music. It's understandable that the musicians and people behind that want to be adequately compensated for that. So I think there's obviously going to be difficult conversations to come in terms of obviously how much money is going to, you know, the really large influencers in the space versus your more sort of, you know, the smaller, more local influencers. But yeah, I think it's fair and I think it is broadly sustainable in the long run from my perspective.
Yeah. One thing I will add is it's the importance of having an agency to negotiate. That's something we stress a lot. We work with the creators to make sure what the brand is paying for and the outcomes they're going to get is reasonable. So it's a huge part of what we do at Digital Voices is training a team of in hardcore negotiations. There's a book that we make the whole team read, which is actually written by an ex-FBI investigator about actually negotiating in hostage situations. So it really is something we put a lot of importance on, and actually being able to do that and negotiate fairly, and the brand gets what they should get and we're paying the influencer fairly as well.
Nice.
That's amazing.
It's a really good book. It's called Never Split the Difference, by the way. I just realised I didn't say it.
Yeah, good memory. I'll note that for sure. How do you see the influencer marketer landscape developing then over the next couple of years? Because obviously you've said a lot has changed in the last couple of years. What do you see for the future?
Wow, it's a big question. I think we're on the journey already. I think there's a huge amount of shift that's happening. As I said, the CEO announcement from Unilever showing the direction things are going in. So firstly, I see creators sitting around the table at the beginning of a brand's annual planning strategy or campaign strategy. So I think traditionally influencer has been, you know, maybe not so much this year. I think we've made some big leaps and strides, but last year, maybe the year before and before that, is a bolt-on. It's kind of, you know, we would get briefs for the Super Bowl, something that happens at the same date every year, but the TVC was done, the TV, you know, spot was booked, and a week before we're, oh no, we should do influencer marketing, how do we do it? And we're seeing the shift already for Super Bowl in January that actually we're being briefed as alongside the other agencies. And I think brands will even be comfortable with us bringing creators along so they can co-chair, co-create. So it's not just about, oh, hi, creator, we've actually got this idea, could you bring it to life? It's, creator, what do you think the idea should be? Let's bring it to life together. So I'm really excited about that. And the opportunity that they bring is untapped in terms of understanding their audiences, understanding how to drive impact, and their brains that we should be using even more. And I think alongside that is product co-creation as well. So how can they feed into, okay, Brand X is looking to launch some new products next year, but actually what do Gen Z want? Like, we don't understand what it might be that we are currently offering that could be a differentiator. So how could you bring influencers into the room to co-create and actually productize something for the future? So I think it's using them more as a strategic visionary more than ever. And I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, amazing. Matt, what are your thoughts here for the future?
Yeah, I think it's going to basically carry on that maturation path and, as you say, become much more strategic in terms of how it's used. One thing we've obviously seen around the office is the AI influencers spring up across LinkedIn pages. To me, I don't necessarily think that's the right way to go. To me, I think influencer marketing, it's all about that, you know, connection and authenticity and that aspirational piece, in the sense that it's a real human. Why would you want to aspire to just some AI created thing? So I don't necessarily think that's going to play out for the industry. But yeah, otherwise I think it's definitely going to carry on this maturation that we've seen over the last, you know, 5 to 6 years or so.
I couldn't agree more. And it's I'm pleased you said that. It's a topic that I'm super passionate about, is the fact that I love influencer marketing because it democratizes media spend and puts it into the pockets of the single mother creating cooking videos from her bedroom, and, you know, the entrepreneur who's trying to build a product. And I think there's something really special in that. And it feels quite sad to me to actually put influencer money into the pockets of AI influencers who's, you know, part of a big corporate business. And I think it's a shame and really defeats the point of what influencers stands for, which is building community, authenticity, and, you know, almost building that online community and friendship in a sense. So I think there's a huge role for AI in the role of the process for influencer creation. And we work with Adobe on creating content and improving creativity and enhancing through, you know, all the amazing features Adobe can offer. But actually, I think at the end of it, people want to hear from a human.
100%.
Are you seeing a lot of brands using both AI for their influencer marketing as well as traditional in-person influencer marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the way that we work, we have, you know, use influencer marketing is unique in, I guess, the media landscape because of there's so much you can automate, but actually speaking to, you know, we're a global business. We work in most markets. And for example, speaking to an influencer in Sweden, you know, actually using Google Translate and trying to send something over email is not the way. Trying to distill a brief for one of our brands in that market means actually having somebody who speaks Swedish in our team and having a one-on-one conversation with them. So that part of it is still very much needed to be humanized. But I think the way that we use AI for our clients is to improve the workflow and to speed up the process. So it's automating the way that we get information to the client, get it back from the client, and do some of our kind of brand safety checks and things like that. But also in through creativity. Some brands are much more risk averse and would rather the influencers don't use any form of AI throughout the process. And we can work in that way. And we do have brands that stipulate that. But on the other sense, it's using AI for creativity. So it might be just to enhance the video itself as opposed to like kind of completely created from AI from the ground up.
And obviously in terms of timing and things of the brands that are wanting to stay away from the AI process, mm-hmm. are they happy with the kind of extended timelines then that may be in place?
Yeah, it's a trade-off. Most of our brands are happy to use AI in the workflow, so that definitely helps. But yeah, I guess if you're not using AI and there is a, you know, that side of it in terms of it being a longer process, then traditionally, brands do understand there's a compromise, and I think we're only improving timelines rather than going backwards. So hopefully nothing feels too negative, I don't think.
Great. Well, yeah, I think let's shift gears a little bit to two platforms that are facing two very different futures. Redis reported a very successful Q2 with a 78% year-over-year increase. The results reveals that the majority of Redis revenue continues to come from ads, representing 93% of the company's total revenue. The growth of its advertising business is heavily supported by its AI-powered marketing tools. Meanwhile, Snap reported a revenue increase of 9% year over year for Q2. The social media giant is still adding millions of new users worldwide, although it's seeing a decrease in US users, which are its main revenue source. Snap generates almost four times more revenue per user in its North America audience than in the rest of the world segments. Matt, I'm going to come to you first on this. How do the financial situations of both of these media giants compare?
I think overall you've got Reddit very much seizing upon that growth narrative, even though it's, you know, 6 years older than Snap. Obviously, you know, if you boil it down to brass tacks, when you've got $89 million income for Reddit versus a $263 million loss for Snap, you're going to be asking questions as to what the financial stability or growth potential of those companies are. Obviously, you've got Reddit very much embracing AI in terms of its deals with Google. But while there's, you know, definitely more room for growth with Reddit and its AI prospects, I'm curious as to where that ceiling really is. Obviously, it doesn't have the scale of Snap. Obviously, it's like, you know, hundreds of millions of users less. It doesn't have the scale of like a Pinterest, for example. So yes, there's growth potential, but how far past those levels is that ceiling? And I'm not necessarily sure where that is, especially as it's got quite a more skeptical audience of advertising compared to some of those other platforms. Obviously, at the moment, in terms of Reddit ads, they're quite unobtrusive, similar to a TikTok or Instagram. You can scroll past them quite easily. I think if you were to make those more obtrusive and try and, you know, up the ads metrics in terms of the engagement, I just don't think the audience would be as, you know, willing to receive those ads compared to a Snap, for example. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm sure over the next few quarters, we're still going to see Reddit going up and up and up. Snap is quite a weird company. They always go up and down, up and down. Never really predict where they're going to fall. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out for sure.
And Georgia, what are your thoughts on the Q2 results?
I think Snapchat's an interesting one. I think it was 2022, the board of Snapchat set out some really big ambitions to kind of commercialize their ad revenue. And as far as I can see, they've done everything that they said they would do. And I think some of the stats don't look like they are in Snapchat's favor, but I think there are some interesting things that sit behind that. So although I know they're seeing a reduction in usage in the US, they are growing in European and UK markets in particular. And that doesn't help with their ad revenue, because obviously you launch in a new market, it takes time for, first you need to build the audience and then you commercialize. So I think that the next few years for Snap will be really interesting. And I think that they have got really big ambitions to commercialize and improve their ad revenue opportunities. They've got Snap Premium, which I think only accounts for like 3% of their users actually only use Snap Premium. But there is a big opportunity trajectory that I know they're planning on doing. And a lot of our European influencers are actually really excited by Snap, because they are actually, the way that they're commercializing revenue for influencers is really appealing. So I'm definitely excited to see what that looks like. And we're seeing a lot of our influencers that we work with in the European market saying they're trying to get more of their audience over to Snap because it is so much more appealing for them from an ad revenue stream. So I do think that's really interesting. And if they get that right, I think it could be a big play. I think the thing that lets Snapchat down is they need to find a way potentially to broaden their demographic, because they genuinely do appeal to a much younger audience. And when that younger audience outgrows Snap, the next audience kind of comes along, which means that they are kind of stuck in that bubble of a very young Gen Z demographic. So I think either they focus on broadening that or improve their commercial opportunities and kind of push harder on that. So definitely interested to see how that goes. And I do think kind of, you know, platforms like TikTok and Meta are really good at speaking to agencies like us in terms of the opportunities. And we've always got an idea of what's commercialized and how we can partner. I don't feel the same way with Snap. So I'd be excited to see more of them on the road showing around the agency world and seeing how they can support there. So I think that'd be really interesting. And on Reddit, I think it's such an interesting opportunity and forum. But I think to your point, it's definitely difficult when it comes to commercializing, because that's not really what the audience are there for. I love the fact that it's anonymized. I love the fact that people can be really rogue. There's this really interesting Spotify podcast, which I listen to now and again, which is horror stories from Reddit. So it's like things that people have talked about in their real life on Reddit, like all summarized into a podcast, which I think is really cool. But obviously with the search functionality on Google and the fact that a lot of LLMs do scrape Reddit for their learning, that you are seeing even more of the conversations being resurfaced. So I think there's I'm really excited genuinely to see how things change over the next few years and what we can learn.
Do you think Reddit's AI-powered tools and the data licensing deals can turn into a serious rival then to the likes of Meta and Google? Because you did mention them.
Yes, I think so. I think there is huge opportunity, and I don't know behind the scenes what they're thinking and planning over the next few years, but they are sitting on a wealth of information, and obviously that information is already being used widely. And it's really impressive the way that they use their AI to scan and summarize that information, because, you know, there's so many things I ask about on Reddit, and actually thousands and thousands of comments. But the fact that they summarize it so beautifully with AI, and it makes it so obtainable and to quickly pick up on something. Like I said, I think they're sitting on streams of data, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are really smart with the commercialization, even more so over the years, but maybe in a less traditional ads revenue perspective and more in an insight-led perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting. Matt, have you got any thoughts on this and the Reddit AI tool?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. I agree. There's so many opportunities in terms of how they could potentially leverage that AI data, but also in terms of, you've got to remember, it's still the core platform in and of itself. And there was a quote in the earnings from their CEO which said that our communities show how valuable human conversation and knowledge are. And I don't know about you both, but already on some of the subreddits I subscribe to, there are a couple of conversations where it's just like, has this been written by AI? You know, either in terms of posts and comments, and you've had people responding saying, this looks like it was written by AI. So I just don't want them to, you know, kill the goose that laid the golden egg in terms of the, how valuable that platform is, as you say, in terms of the human interaction and conversation, when if you're going to have AI coming into that, kind of spoiling that a little bit.
Yeah, but
there
so
are
true.
Opportunities there.
Yeah, I did read something that's quite interesting recently, that some researchers from Zurich University actually infiltrated a few Reddit conversations with kind of AI agents that they'd built. And they were trying to understand if AI bots could change human perceptions. So it was like on very particular topics that people were all having a very similar discussion on, and the AI bots were there to basically change people's mind. They got caught and they got told off, and it never came to anything, and the research was never allowed to be released. So we don't know whether or not they did or didn't change people's minds, but that's quite scary that people are seeing that as an opportunity. And like you said, it kind of defeats the point. Like, it's anonymous, so we don't have to be AI bots. We can be ourselves, and no one's going to judge. So I think that's what we need to lean into with Reddit.
Yeah, definitely wary on that one for
sure. Keep an eye out.
Yeah. But obviously on the other side of that, from the human side of Reddit, we're obviously seeing their AI paying off big time. Snapchat's global growth isn't quite enough to mask its US slowdown, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, two platforms, two very different trajectories. And yeah, I think that's a nice place to end that story. And I guess that's a wrap for the podcast this week. We have seen some nice shifts in the creative economy and platform power plays. So yeah, thank you so much, Georgia. I really appreciate you joining us this week and sharing your thoughts.
Thank you for having me.
And Matt, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that is it from the Mad Tech podcast. And we look forward to tuning in next week.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.